back on the record, and we're going to ask for time management purposes that we would be very considerate, because we do have another hearing, although it's away, but we do have another hearing after this hearing. So we're going to ask that if you would take that under consideration in making your final statement to the board.
Thank you, Chairman Wright. Before I get started, I wanted to address my colleague, Chris Nidebach, and Sean, to see if they have anything to say before I give final remarks.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and the board, I do have a few very brief remarks that I'd like to make in response to a couple of things. First, I would like to make sure that the board knows that Mr. Jensen has an extensive plan that includes identifying his triggers, mapping out his responses, and identifying sources of support in contrast to what the Attorney General presented. That's contained in Exhibit 13 to the packet that was submitted by Mr. Jensen. And if you look near the end, there's actually a map called Trauma Management Ongoing Therapy, which Dr. Gilman testified about, that John has a standing appointment at the VA, where he'll be receiving treatment for his PTSD. This includes signs of relapse that Sean knows he needs to watch for, and that it includes action steps that he will take if any of those signs arise. But he is taking a very, very active role in making sure that he does maintain remission, which you heard from both of the doctors is as close to a cure as you get with PTSD. The other thing I'd like you to take a look at is the last page of Exhibit 13, which is Sean's restorative justice plan. There is no denying what happened in March of 1973 on March 7th. There's no denying the unbelievable and unbearable trauma, suffering, pain that the families of Kathy and Jim have gone through. But Sean was very, very ill in 1973, and he's subsequently been treated for the illness that led him to commit the acts that he committed on March 7th, 1973. Mr. Jensen has changed quite a bit. As Dr. Gilman and Stewart both testified, because of trauma that Sean suffered in his childhood and as a result of his combat exposure in Vietnam, his neurodevelopment was delayed. And so the person you see sitting before you many, many years later, decades later, Sean at 70 is a very different person. And I believe that the testimony that you heard today from the people who work with him now, from the folks whose lives he positively impacted, from the extensive legacy of kindness and altruism that Sean has built over the past few decades, that he is a very different person, and that he would be able to successfully re-enter his family and his community. But never, not for a moment, does Sean forget why he's been incarcerated, nor does he forget the two lives that were taken as a result of his illness, and his restorative justice plan speaks directly to that. And I'm going to read, it's very short, I'm going to read it to you because I really want you to hear that he is taking responsibility and he wants to actively atone for his actions in 1973. The objective of his restorative justice plan is, I cannot undo what I did in 1973, nor can I do anything to bring Kathy and James back. All I can do is live a life that honors Kathy and James, spreads kindness, and fosters altruism. My restorative justice plan seeks to do that by, one, helping the families of murder victims heal, whether that be through connecting with the person who took the life of their loved one, or just in hearing my story or the stories of other violent offenders. And two, helping to mend families torn apart by incarceration by mentoring and supporting those released from prison as they reintegrate into their families and communities. To this end, he will pursue a restorative justice certificate that will allow him to start developing a program for victim-offender dialogue. There are other programs like this in other states. Most recently, Colorado has experienced significant success with this type of program in healing both sides of the equation and certainly bringing some relief and some healing to the victims. And he will also volunteer and continue mentoring in Atlas's organization, where he will continue to teach the lessons of balance and kindness that you heard other prisoners talk about earlier today. Sean has a proven record of safety in the community. He was out on over 100 folks over the course of 7 years. He existed in the community, he stopped in the community, he was a statewide driver for the community. He existed among us and did a great job. No one is saying Sean is perfect. I'm pretty sure that none of us sitting here or over on that end of the video monitor is perfect. Certainly he made mistakes, he made some poor judgments, but none of them rise to the level of denying him parole or demonstrating that he is a risk to society. Sean has been living some of the most severe triggering conditions humanity can create by being incarcerated, and he has continued to rise above that, not get involved in gang activities, and mentor other prisoners, mentor staff, and pay it forward. He wants, and his restorative justice plan speaks directly to this, he wants to leave a legacy of altruism, because in the end, the darkness that occurred on March 7th, 1973 can never be undone. The only thing that Sean can do to right that wrong is to bring light into that dark space. And through his work in prison and his reentry plan, that's exactly what he needs. And from there, I will turn it over to my colleagues present in the boardroom.
Thank you.
Patrick, that's a sex group. Go ahead.
Please go ahead, sir. Listen.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joey Dormey appearing here, Mr. Jensen. You know, we've heard a lot of testimony, and the board, it's been stated many times here today, has the very difficult position of making a decision. And the burden the board has is to weigh the differences between two individuals. We have an individual in 1973 who no one here has ever disputed was severely sick, unraveling, committing thefts, all this stuff that they were saying leading up to this, you know, a lot of that was true, some of it wasn't, but we're not here to pick nits. You know, and now we have a person over a span, you know, that is well over my lifespan who's spent in prison. A positive record, a record of somebody who has achieved, who has provided service to his fellow man, a record of somebody who has tried to make amends. So we have, you know, within that time span as well, we have heard testimony about an evolving science. So in 1973 at the trial, we heard that PTSD wasn't recognized. That's why you have these widely disparate psychological diagnoses. In 1985, when PTSD was in its infancy and still considered an anxiety disorder rather than a traumatic disorder, you know, we still didn't understand the nature of PTSD. And over the years, more and more research on the human brain neuroscience has been conducted. And you can see in the records that the last five psychological evaluations all concluded the same exact way, that this is chronic PTSD. That, you know, the earlier diagnoses of sociopathy and psychopathy that, you know, there have been opinions expressed about today are based in antiquated methodologies, antiquated literature, literature that is no longer relevant and that has been overridden three times since this first trial. So to keep this short, my colleague Katie Pazowski would like to make one short statement. We have a man who has done nothing, you know, in the last, you know, 40 years except better himself and take, you know, an existence that culminated in this tragic loss of life by his own hand and tried to do the best he could with what he had and, you know, inspire others to become better people as well. And that is at the heart of what rehabilitation actually is. That is one of, you know, a couple of missions that the ABC, you know, has indoctrinated in their mission statement: to punish, to protect society, and to rehabilitate. And Sean Jensen, oh, real quickly, there's been much made that Dr. Gilman testified that Mr. Jensen was at no risk. If you go to her statement, both in your packet, and I have her statement here, she says, as certain as I can be from somebody in my professional experience, Mr. Jensen presents no risk. So it's a qualified statement. She has previously said in documentation, you know, submitted before, that he is low risk. Nobody here is saying that Mr. Jensen presents no risk. But I will tell you, and I've been before the board before to talk about statistics, Mr. Jensen is nearly 70 years old. The recidivism rate for people of his age is roughly 3%. The fact that he has excelled in education and programming while incarcerated reduces that another 25%. And these are statistics that come directly from ABC itself. So in closing, this board has a job to do. And again, it's weighing against a person who no longer exists, who has received the counseling and is, you know, proven time and time again that he can be law-abiding while inside, has proven time and time again that he is always introspective and always looking to deal with the issues of his past. And that is the type of person who, in our opinion, as people who have worked with Sean Jensen and known Sean Jensen, you've heard from fellow inmates to highly esteemed lawyers, former attorney generals, former board members, all his counsel, his friends. This is a man who presents little risk of recidivism. This is a man that we believe in. This is somebody who we admire for what he's accomplished inside prison. And for that reason, we want to reiterate that Mr. Jensen is ready to be released on parole. And if Katie Fazowski, my colleague, can come up here briefly and make a final statement. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Katie Fazowski again. Just to close, for those of us who have met with Sean Jensen on many occasions, Rhonda, his wife, for those of us who know Sean, we know that he is a good person. We know that he has tried very hard to better himself inside, and he's done just that. We know of the lives that he has touched over the years, and that he's changed. You've heard testimony about that today. We know who he is. He is not the person who was described as the person in 1973. He is not that person. And we would ask that you take that into consideration when making your decision. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. At this time, the board is going to prepare to go into discussion. Before going into discussion, let me just make just a couple of comments. Let me just read this one paragraph. As stunned as at the time this crime was committed for parole was, that there is a reasonable probability that the applicant will live and remain at liberty without violating the law, then the board may authorize the release of the applicant upon parole. I just wanted to put that in the record so that we would know, so that we all would be on the same level. The board, before the board goes into discussion, I recognize the fact that this is an emotional situation. Regardless of what decision the board might make today, there will be some disappointments on the one side or the other. And the board goes through this on a daily basis in hearings. We do not make everybody happy with the decisions of the board. But the board, in my opinion, we act independent of each other. We have not discussed this hearing prior to today, and prior to our getting ready to discuss it now. I do not know what any board member will say or how any board member might vote this afternoon. We do not do that. Also, in keeping with the open meeting laws of the state of Arizona, we will make our decision while sitting right here. We will not go out of this room. We will not ask anyone to leave. Everyone can hear what the board will have to say. I want to thank each of you for being professional today, and we look forward to your remaining professional as the board prepares to go into discussion. At this time, remember, board, what we're looking at, standards at the time, was this town was committed. But the rule was that there is reasonable probability that the applicant will live and remain at liberty without violating the law, then the board may authorize the release of the applicant upon parole. The board is now in discussion. In keeping with the protocol of this board, in case there might be a tie, since we have five board members at even number, I'm going to be the last one to vote. Because it's my responsibility, or the chair's responsibility, to break any tie that might exist as a result of this hearing. So this time, is there a board member who would like to volunteer to be the first one to discuss before we vote? Get a volunteer? Okay, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis, Willie Kiwanis.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. I walked into this boardroom as objective and detached as I could manage. We certainly heard a lot of testimony today. And over the course of that testimony, I returned to the basics, the three core concerns: public safety, victims' concerns, and men's rights. Based on everything that I gathered today as an independent voting board member, I do not believe that Mr. Jensen can safely return to the community, nor do I believe that granting parole serves the interest of justice. I think it would only further traumatize the collective family and community. Court-ordered reductions from death to life, to life without parole, to life with parole, were considerable forms of leniency already. Furthermore, I have concerns, I still have concerns, even after the last statements, about testimony from supporters that there is no or zero risk of Mr. Jensen relapsing or reoffending. And frankly, I still have some leftover concerns from our last hearing. I recognize that Mr. Jensen did not speak much today, and I respect that. But it came up several times, this pattern of aggrandizing, of specialness. Someone on the victim's supporter side stated, why can't he just be satisfied with his accomplishments? And what I noticed the last time was that he kept making references to Marine Special Forces, a title that I knew did not exist from my experience in the military. I know about 3rd Battalion, pardon me, Battalion Reconnaissance, Marine Force Recon, the entire military community. But he kept using that title, and I kept thinking the same thing. Why can't he be satisfied with his accomplishments? It was a red flag to me, but that's where I'll begin the discussion.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Kiwanis. Honorable Mr. Neal, I'm just going another row. Sorry.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I got to go back to the PTSD. I personally am offended that PTSD is being pushed to justify criminal activity, especially amongst vets. Now, the statistic of 15% of combat vets have PTSD. What about the other, 85% of vets? The majority of them probably have PTSD too, because of the life of a service person. But irregardless, if we just go back to the 15%, what percentage of that 15% commit murder? Probably not very many. Also, I have some very dear friends that have been treated by the VA for PTSD. And they don't have any violent tendencies, but they're under constant treatment to make sure they don't grow that way. So then, the biggest red flag for me today was the continuing use of the word chronic PTSD. I have several illnesses, and they're called chronic, which means they're continuing. They always have to be treated. That means there's always a chance of a relapse. And the doctors can't say, yes, if you have relapse, it's just going to be minor compared to what you've had before. They say, we've got to treat it, we've got to watch it. And I have chronic pain. That means I have pain all the time. And then it comes back. And some days it gets really, really, really bad. So if he is suffering from chronic PTSD, and it is a sufficient disease to consider as an excuse for murdering two people out in the field, then since it's chronic, I don't think there's any more than a 50-50 chance that he won't repeat his crime. And then when you take somebody whose crime that they're running for is murder, we definitely want to take the chance of a relapse and have a repeat offender that murders somebody. So, in all honesty and my sense of fairness today, and I do consider the victim side specifically, I have had a loved one murdered, so I've been there, done that, know what it's like to feel that type of pain. But my biggest concern is public safety and serving justice as well as the victims. And I just don't think that a release at this time would serve justice. And I also think it would be a risk to the public safety at this time. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wheel. Mr. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Eich. We heard a lot of information today from both sides, and a lot of it is new information that we hadn't heard before, because I was here for the last hearing as well. I do appreciate what Mr. Jensen is doing, helping the inmates, former inmates who gave testimony on how much he's impacted their lives. I hope he's doing that from an altruistic place within himself, and not just for the appearance of doing something good. I think he is, but I cannot be sure. My concern is just that when you're in a prison environment, it's a very controlled environment, very limited options of activity. And once one is released to outside prison, pretty much the sky's the limit as what you can do. And he has, in his past, when he was a prohibited possessor, had a weapon. And the details of this crime and the information we've heard today about the crime itself are just bizarre. And I would not want to take the risk that someone who could commit an act like that could possibly again come into possession of a firearm. And I would not be in favor of any type of release,
sir.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse, and Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. We have heard a lot of information today. I just want to hit on a couple of things. Some things that came out as remission and complete remission, reasonable probability. I did hear the psychologist today say that he was in remission and complete remission and not at risk. But when Ms. Rittenhouse asked the question if he was cured, the answer was that they don't use that term to say that that they were cured. He has been typed as a sociopath as well as having chronic PTSD. I do want to go back to the day that this incident occurred. From the pre-sentence report, where he stated in the pre-sentence report that he had got a couple of his guns and was going to the desert east of Phoenix to do some shooting. And he said he was going out to actually do some shooting. And then this crime happened in March of 73. And the next month in April, the detectives went to his job and they found the rifle in his truck. And a couple of weeks after the crime was committed, he had traded or sold the gun or traded the gun for a shotgun with his cousin, Mr. Lucas. After the detectives went to his job and confiscated the rifle, according to the pre-sentence report, he thought that the ballistics test was going to match. So he went to his cousin, Mr. Lucas, and asked him to get rid of the revolver that day. And Mr. Lucas, who, according to the pre-sentence report, is his cousin, said that, asked him if he was the one who actually did the shooting. That time he told him that he was, but that it was an accident. There was no mention of PTSD or going through any of the issues. And then after he was arrested on that day, he told two separate people while he was in jail that he had committed it. And each time he had a different reason why he committed. One was that it was murder for hire, where it was a drug dealer. The other one was very similar to what he had done. The detectives, according to the pre-sentence report, said that, you know, although he told two separate stories, the information that he gave reference to the incident was the same. The detectives also stated in there that they were suspicious from the beginning because he reported that the victim had been shot, and said that from the position of the victim's bodies, the bodies were, I believe it was laid face down, and you couldn't tell without moving the bodies that they had been shot. And I think that was what set off the first thing. The whole idea of the PTSD, according to what I, all information we have, didn't come out until it was time for mostly time to trial. I don't think that it would be in the best interest of society or for the good of society, nor do I also think that there's a high reasonable probability that he may reoffend if he was released, even though he's in remission. It appears that he's only in remission because he's in prison. And if he was released from prison, there's nothing to indicate that he would not be a risk once he got out. And again, I go back to Ms. Rittenhouse asking the direct question if he was actually cured. And although that he's in remission now, it does not go back to leading to where he was actually out. So I think that it would definitely be a reasonable probability that that he would get out and that he could likely be able to commit a crime. And I think that also that I'm not sure that he would be able to live at liberty without violating the law or reoffending just based on all information. I do, you know, commend him for all the things that he's done and being on remission while he's incarcerated. And I also commend those inmates who have been in prison and now out who are doing some great things. And I believe one of them even said that he's the first person in the family to go graduate from college, obtain an AA. That those are great things. I'd like to encourage them to continue to do those things. But I definitely do not agree with giving Mr. Jensen any type of parole at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. I think in making a determination as one board member, and as I've stated two or three times, we do act independent of each other. I think that we do have to go back to 1973, 1985, as well as 2016 to see what happened. And I think that when we look at everything that has taken place, then we can come up with a conclusion. This board has a real responsibility. Each board member has had the opportunity to read all this file, and each board member has read this file, everything in here. And then we have a testimony today, and some of the testimony conflicts with each other. Therefore, the board members, the citizens of Arizona, have to make a determination within themselves what would be best for them. And after listening to the testimony today, after reviewing all of the materials that have been presented to the board, and especially the Ames report, and especially recognizing the fact that this is a Rule 32, and looking at, and one of the things that would concern me, I know it's minor, but is the discipline, 2018, that was a discipline. If one knows that he or she is coming before this board, please do not commit an act at all. It disciplined or get a ticket at all, but we did give a minor in 2018. I think that we also, as we look at the pre-sentence report, we look at the psychology, the PTSD. I think that sometimes we try to, the whole center today was around that, it seems. But I think that we have to take everything under consideration. Yes, we have to take under consideration how much progress he's made. We also need to look at how much progress he's made since last year. And once again, we must make that decision whether there's a reasonable probability that the applicant will live and remain at liberty without violating the law, then the board might authorize the release of the applicant upon parole. With this being said, I'm not in favor at this time. This time I would like to offer a motion. My motion is going to be very simple, to deny Mr. Jensen, ADC number 032465, to deny general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And that is my motion.
Second.
Agreed.
Motion by myself, C.T. Wright, to deny. Seconded by the Honorable Mr. Neal. Agreed by the Honorable Mr. Johnson. Agreed by the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis. Agreed by the Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. A unanimous vote of this board, it has been denied. Since this original offense took place in 73, I'm not going to ask for a 12-month set-off. He will be recertified by the Department of Correction at the appropriate time. Release type denied is 412A, 411, home arrest. Reasons for denial, and board members, please feel free to assist me. Serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant behavior, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, multi-victims, violation of previous parole or probation, in as much as we discovered today that there had been some paroles or probation, perhaps out of the state of Arizona, but this was brought to the attention of the board today. Prior criminal history, recent, and I know although it's wrong and although it's minor, but it's there. According to Ames, if Ames is wrong, then that has to be corrected. Recent disciplinary infraction, single, not plural. Anything else, board members, that should be included? Hearing nothing else at this time from board members. Mr. Jensen, you've heard the decision of the board. Do I need to repeat the reasons for denial at this time, sir?
No.
Okay, thank you. This will end the hearing. Thank all of you for your participation, and he will be certified at the appropriate time by the Department of Corrections for another hearing. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I'm going to ask the board members to remain in the room at this time, and we will conduct our last hearing for today, which is a waive. Thank you.